It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferret. As a child, Alan Rabinowitz stuttered uncontrollably. His teachers placed him in a class for disturbed children, and other kids avoided him.
But whenever he spoke to animals, like his pet snake, turtle, and hamster, his words flowed fluently and he felt confident.
Alan vowed to overcome his stuttering and become a voice for jaguars and other wild cats. Today he's known as the Indiana Jones of wildlife conservation, a respected zoologist whose work has created numerous sanctuaries for cats and other threatened animals.
Alan Rabinowitz joins us today to talk about his new children's book just out today. It's called A Boy and a Jaguar. He's a conservationist and the president and CEO of Panthera, a nonprofit organization devoted to protecting the world's 36 wild cat species. He's also an advocate for stutterers and a spokesperson for the Stuttering Foundation of America. Alan, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, to understand where you are today, how you got there, we have to go all the way back to your boyhood as a child who had a stutter, left you isolated from the world. But there was a way that you were able to talk, and that was with animals. And all of this kind of started during this trip you took once. Your dad took you to the Bronx Zoo when you were a young boy, and you made a promise. What happened?
Well, at a very early age, I learned that I could speak with animals. I couldn't speak in the adult world. I had a very severe stutter for as long as I can remember. And anytime I try to speak, I would go into severe blocks, and I'd spasm and sputter. So I couldn't speak to people. But when I would come home, I could speak to my little animals, to my hamster or gerbil or pet snake and chameleon. And I realized that the world of animals held the only solace for me. That was my real world, not the outside world of human beings. Whenever I had, my parents didn't really know how to address this very well because we didn't have computers at the time, no internet. They did what they could. They took me to hypnotherapy. We tried drug therapy. We tried psychiatrists. And they even tried shock therapy once, shocking my brain, trying to reset it, thinking that might work. But the only thing that really worked was talking to the animals. And when I would have a bad week at school, my father would take me to the Bronx Zoo because he knew that that was the one place in the entire city where I would relax and I could feel at ease. My favorite place at the zoo was what they called the Great Cat House, the Lion House, where there was cage after cage of big cats, lions and tigers in their concrete cages. They would all charge at the bars, but there was one jaguar sat in one cage, and while all the other cats roared and charged and came up close, the jaguar always sat back and watched everything. And that was the animal I would always go to, and that was the animal I would stand by until it would come close to the bars. And my father would stay back because he knew this was my time, my private moment. And I would talk to the jaguar. I would tell him my hopes and my dreams and how the world was crazy and stupid for treating me the way that they did. And I realized that this incredibly huge, powerful animal, like all the big cats, they were locked in their cages in the same way I was locked inside of my own head. Not only could I talk to the animals, but I realized that they were like me. They had no voice. That the world would treat them very, very differently if they had a human voice than they treat them now. So I made a promise. I made a promise as a child over and over again every time I was taken to the zoo that if I ever got my voice, and I wasn't sure I ever would, frankly, that I would try to be their voice as well because they were saving me and I wanted to try to help them.
Wow. So you made that promise over and over again. Did you know what that meant, what it would mean to try to save them?
Not at all. I had no idea. I was a child. I realized that they were my best friends. They were the things helping me be normal, be human. I'm not sure what I would have done had I had no other outlet except them because As I said, there was no other way to find other stutterers in the world. The New York City school system put me in special classes where they dumped all the children who they didn't consider normal, children with things that they didn't understand at the time, like ADHD or dyslexia or different stages of autism. We were all put in these special classes that other children would call the retarded classes. So my only outlet for being normal were with the animals. And I had no way to repay them. I had no way to thank them other than say, if I can, I will help you someday, without any realization that I would ever be able to help them. And even more so, I never realized that I would end up working on jaguars of all things.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. I mean, you did have this bond with, you know, your pets at home, your hamster, your snake, your turtle, but there was something special about the way that you connected with these great cats. And, you know, they were cut off at the knees. They were stuck in zoos, and you sort of intuited that. But do you know what it was about the great cats that drew you to them, why you felt that connection with these animals and not another?
I do. I felt it was their strength. I felt strong. I felt part of how I would try to compensate for not being thought of as normal or being thought of as broken in school or in the human world is that I tried excelling in everything. So I excelled in my academic studies, and I excelled in sports. And my father taught me he didn't know how to help me take out my anger other than teach me how to wrestle and box. So I felt strong. I felt like a strong, smart, powerful young person who was locked inside this body, and the outside world thought of as broken and dumb and not really useful. And yet I knew it was different. And those great cats were the same. They were some of the most powerful animals on earth, locked behind these bars for no other reason, really, than that they couldn't speak, because I know that people wouldn't keep them behind bars if the animals had a human voice that said, please, I don't want to be here. Please let me out.
And that story has followed you all these years, and now it's the subject of your new children's book that came out today, A Boy and a Jaguar. And to fast forward a bit, you do get to become a speaking voice for these, you know, more or less silent cats. You became a conservationist. You went to Belize, where you had the opportunity to actually study jaguars. How did you get there, and what was that like?
Well, I was attracted to my entire life as I went through school with a severe stutter, because I didn't learn how to control my speech, learn the tools that I use now, until I was a senior in college. So science is what always attracted me, because science to me seemed to be truths outside the world of human beings. But I didn't know what I could do with that science if I couldn't speak. But then when back at that time, there were no courses in conservation or environmental science. I was lucky that when I was a sophomore in college, they offered the first course ever in something called animal ecology. And as soon as I took that course, I realized this was my calling. This was the way to combine science and facts with the outside world and with the world of animals, and try to keep my promise while being a scientist and actually doing something useful in the world. So I decided that was what I wanted to do, and I went on to graduate school in zoology and wildlife biology with no knowledge of what jobs I could possibly have, because I knew I didn't want to be a college professor. I wanted to be out there in the world. And that's when I was offered an opportunity by my mentor, George Schaller, one of the world's great naturalists. And he offered me to go. He saw in me what I still hadn't seen in myself. And he asked me if I wanted to go to this little tiny country, which had just been changed from British Honduras to the country of Belize. It had just gotten its independence with lots of jaguars, and be the first person ever in the world to capture and study jaguars in the rainforest. That's how it all started.
Wow. Well, we're talking right now with Alan Rabinowitz, and we're going to hear more about his encounters with jaguars in Belize coming up in just a bit and the work he did there to create a safe space for them. He is a conservationist, president, and CEO of Panthera, a nonprofit organization devoted to protecting the world's 36 cat species. He's got a new book out right now, and it's called A Boy and a Jaguar. And we want to hear from you, too, on this. If you overcome something like stuttering, something that kept you caged, and eventually let yourself be free again. And what about interactions with animals? Did you find those powerful or helpful as you were trying to get over your challenges to surmount them? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us on talk@WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time. We're going to get a check of the headlines now with Noah Ovshinsky. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking now with Alan Rabinowitz, a zoologist, conservationist, and the president and CEO of Panthera, a nonprofit devoted to protecting the world's 36 wildcat species. We're talking about his new book and his story, his life story, essentially. His new children's book is called A Boy and a Jaguar. It came out today. And we're going to begin right now by listening to the sound of a jaguar in the wild. Three different sounds there, from a jaguar purring, a couple other calls. Alan, you speak jaguar, if anyone does. What was the jaguar saying?
Boy, does that bring me back. That's as you were playing that, I felt as if I was back in the darkness of the jungle listening to that. Nothing would put my hair on end more than walking through the jungle at night. And then all of a sudden hearing that low, deep rumbling sound, which was kind of a warning, just I'm here, you know, you're too close, stay away. The last sound was a vocalization which you don't often hear. It's not made for a jaguar to be using with another human. They often use that vocalization, that kind of strange, higher-pitched one, when they're trying to communicate with other jaguars, if there's a female in the area, and they're trying to attract one another. Those are very different sounds. You usually don't hear those sounds together.
Wow. Yeah, it is. They're primal. I can't imagine. I heard them through headphones, and that was enough. I can't imagine hearing them in the forest.
Oh, that low, deep, deep rumbling. That's one of the most primal sounds I have ever heard. And the funny thing was, as terrifying as that sound seems, it's not the jaguar being aggressive. It's just the jaguar saying, you know, go away. You're too close now. Because if they want to attack, if they are stalking or want to hunt you, they would never vocalize like that first. You wouldn't hear them. You wouldn't hear them. You wouldn't see them until they were on you making a crunching, killing blow.
Well, you had, in Belize, an incredible encounter with a jaguar all on your own, where you got closer than probably most people would be comfortable getting, and it was almost as though something passed between you. Could you tell us what happened?
That was the most incredible encounter of my life, and I've had numerous encounters with big cats, but this one particular one, this was unbelievable. I was riding high from having convinced the government of Belize to set up the world's first jaguar preserve, and I thought it was wonderful. And I had gone back into my study area, into the new reserve, just to see how things were going, when I found this very large track of a male jaguar that I didn't know, because I, after the several years of working there, I knew most of the big cats in the area. This was a new big male, and I was thinking maybe I could see him, although I knew the chances were pretty small. So I just took off by myself, something which I knew I shouldn't have done. You don't normally do that. I just went off walking thinking I'll just follow these tracks for a while and see where they take me. Well, I ended up following them, and it started getting dark while I was in the jungle, and I didn't want to be caught out in the jungle by myself at night, and I didn't have a flashlight. That's a bad combination. So I decided just to go back to camp, and as I turned around, there was the jaguar. The jaguar, it turns out, from having later gone back and looked at the whole track pattern, the jaguar had circled around and had been following me while I was following it. I thought I was following the jaguar, but the jaguar had been following me while I thought I was following it. It had been right in back of me. And it was no more than 10, 15 feet in back of me when I turned around. And I was shocked. I stopped dead. There was the jaguar on the path back I had to go. I felt terrified, although I knew that there was no reason that this jaguar should hurt me, because it could have killed me at any time it wanted to before. It was just curious of why I was following it. But I was fearful because I knew that it could just attack me at any time and I couldn't do a thing. So I sat down, I squatted down, thinking if I make myself small and subdominant, the jaguar maybe will just walk away. So I squatted, and the jaguar did a remarkable thing. The jaguar sat down. So I'm squatting, and the jaguar is sitting, and I'm thinking, well, something's got to happen next, and it can't be good for me that the jaguar's in my path, and we're both sitting. Somebody's got to stand eventually. So I stood up and started backtracking, taking a few steps back, and I tripped, and I actually started falling, thinking, well, if the jaguar wants to attack me now, it easily could. But I just stumbled, and the jaguar stood up and just started walking casually off into the jungle. But before it reached the jungle, it turned around again and just stood there and turned and looked at me. And I had the strongest recollection. I just stood there. All the fear had drained away. And I had the strongest memory of myself as a boy, which I hadn't thought about in years. Myself as a boy peering through the bars of the cage at the Bronx Zoo and the jaguar approaching me through the bars at the Bronx Zoo and making a promise that I would try to be its voice and find a place for us. And here that jaguar was, out there in the wild, free. And I was grown, and I had conquered my stutter, and I was free. And it was a promise kept. I felt the reserve had just been set up. And, you know, to say, I'm a scientist. I can't say I looked in that jaguar's eyes and say that jaguar knew that somehow I had protected it. I think it was more on my side. I felt the unbelievable satisfaction of the circle having closed, my life having come full circle.
Oh, wow. That is an incredible story. Thank you for telling it. And, you know, we got just a minute here left, but you mentioned you had just established a place for this jaguar to be safe, a preserve, and you'd had to speak for a long time to accomplish that. You know, in our last minute, how did that make you feel to accomplish that first preserve for jaguars and
animals? Well, I was terrified. I was given 15 minutes to appear before the prime minister and the cabinet. 15 minutes, and I knew I couldn't stutter, because if I stuttered, it would distract from everything I was trying to do, and they would think about my stuttering and if I was really smart enough, or all these kind of things came back to me from my childhood that I can't stutter and appear broken, and I put everything into it, and those 15 minutes turned into a fluent hour. I spoke to the cabinet for an hour without stuttering, and by the end of that hour, they had walked out of there and voted on setting up the world's first jaguar preserve.
Wow. Well, it's an amazing story. Alan, thank you so much for joining us and sharing it with us. It was truly a pleasure.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure. I enjoyed it.
We've been speaking to Alan Rabinowitz, zoologist, conservationist, and the president and CEO of Panthera, a nonprofit organization that works to protect the world's 36 wildcat species. He's also an advocate for stutterers and a spokesperson for the Stuttering Foundation of America. His new book is just out today. It's called A Boy and a Jaguar.